Hey, it's me, Camille.
And me, Tim. And as promised, you're about to hear the second half of our recent live storytelling event.
Which we called I Live Here.
I know, it's catchy. believe it or not, folks, we write our own material.
Yeah. Anyway, at that event, which was on a chilly night earlier this month, we had half a dozen people from St. Louis tell stories.
And in our last episode, we brought you half of those stories about Black love, about a woman who finds peace in her identity and spirituality, and one from an outspoken politician who once struggled to speak herself, let alone for others.
If that doesn't sound familiar, then stop right now and go catch up. Anyway, in this episode, we're bringing you the remaining three stories that were performed that night. And they're not your typical stories, but they do have something in common.
They all come from local St. Louis artists, and they are all grappling with this idea of place and what it means to call St. Louis home.
So let's get to it. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here, a show for people somewhere on the woke spectrum. Seventeen-year-old Zach Lesmeister was the youngest storyteller to get on stage, but he got some of the biggest applause.
Zach is a senior at Marquette High School, which is in a western suburb of St. Louis, and he's a really, really good poet.
In fact, he was recently named Youth Poet Laureate here in St. Louis. He performed a couple poems at the show, but before he began, he said he wanted people to get to know him as a human and as a person.
So, I am part Vietnamese and German. The Vietnamese comes from my mom's side and the German my dad's. So I grew up with my mom and my grandma from her side in a predominantly Vietnamese household where my grandma really instilled Vietnamese traditional ideals and really immersed me in the culture. And so my family, the Vietnamese side, came over to America at the end of the Vietnam War. So my grandma lived throughout the whole war, experienced all of that. So really, my relationship with her, it's very interesting because, you know, any problem that I've dealt with or had, it really isn't comparable to war and living throughout all of that. So it's helped me put it into perspective, everything that's happened in my life, but also it's kind of like a double-edged sword, because even more serious things, I sometimes feel like I can't bring up to her because it'll be dismissed as, you know, she's been through a lot more than I have. And so this first poem kind of explores like refugee guilt and kind of the experience that, you know, second generation, first generation immigrants feel in America and the pressure from their parents and grandparents. The title of this piece is Telling My Grandmother That My Bloody Nose Wasn't From Running Into a Tree. Hanay, cha'ai. Let me see that, cha'ai. You don't know rat until you see your husband climb a palm tree. I saw napalm drop on him. Magic chick skin to bone burn refugee guilt. Starts with every cousin that pronounces pho is foe. Forget grandma in the nursing home. Starts with, I don't know Vietnamese, pass numbers and curse words. Bleach your skin, cha'ai. Do you think they didn't call me Nem too? Do you think you special snowflake? I saw snow everywhere in Vietnam. Building to snow, body to snow. In the midst of winter, they let us refugee guilt. Starts when nothing that happens to me can compare to war. I don't know war, a metaphor about how my sadness is like a battlefield. Is not actually seeing a battlefield. I know not of bullets and how am I supposed to feel adequate when I can't stand up to some kid that calls me some slur? My grandmother stood in a river for 2 weeks because they're dropping bombs on Hanoi. We are but remnants of Agent Orange after the war. She says they don't like us because we're from the north. They don't like us because Agent Orange causes cancer here. They say here, 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 you are nothing but an Angela Johnson stand-up comedy routine. Here, you do my manicure refugee guilt. Is my grandmother telling me she has seen her neighbors burn alive, seen the head of her church leader float down the Mekong River, and I have seen nothing, felt nothing. Refugee guilt? Is none of this mattering? It is me only having to worry about my grades, the things that matter, honey. Cha'ai, you have to focus on what's important, become doctor on what's important. It rings through my mind, an immigrant's anthem. I came here for you. I did not come from winter for you to become the same winter I left, for you to become anything less, she tells me. Anything less than you're not my grandson. I will never be doctor or lawyer. I will always, always come to disappoint. Thank you, thank you. All right, so as I said before, I grew up in a very culturally Vietnamese environment. And that meant my grandma and my mom would cook traditional Vietnamese cuisine, whether that be, you know, bun sao or we'd eat banh mi, you know. And until recently, about a month ago, I didn't really realize how heavily influenced Vietnamese cuisine is by the French. And the only reason for that is because the French colonized Vietnam. And so banh mi, it's a sandwich, and the bread is a baguette. Bánh xào is an egg crepe, and the crepe obviously comes from France. So this next poem explores that idea of literally like eating the remnants of your colonizers and my colonizers. And so in addition, I also explore kind of being, you know, this Vietnamese American kid growing up in Baldwin, St. Louis, and like there's no Vietnamese like community out there, and at Marquette especially. So there's I think maybe one other Vietnamese person, maybe, but even then it's not very a culturally aware environment. Like on third floor of Marquette, they display all the flags, or most of them, and for the Vietnam flag, they have the South Vietnamese flag from the war instead of the official flag of Vietnam. And they display other communist flags, but just not the official flag of Vietnam. So the next piece is titled Banh Mi. 1887, the baguette is introduced in Vietnam during a period of French colonialism. And Banh Mi, a staple sandwich of Vietnamese cuisine, is created. Ingredients being daikon, carrot, cilantro, chilies, cucumber, and native meat, of course, slathered in mayonnaise and wrapped in an airy baguette. And here we are again, the whites coming in to hold everything together. But then again, what is a sandwich without structure? What is the point of a garden full of vegetables if no one gets to taste the fruits of the labor? It has been said that my people crave to be conquered, that they are hungry for it, that without it, they are starving. In post-racial America, bioterrorism is the infiltration of a culture's cuisine. It's the chef serve a platter reminder that your hand has always fed them. See, to be banh mi is to be European and Vietnamese at the same time. To be desired only when others are hungry, to open a baguette, cream fill it with mayonnaise so your tongue, gilded in white, will never taste home. So me, the divine physical manifestation of manifest destiny, conquers my culture, reclaims my stomach, and purges the white man's remnants. So me, slayer of yeast, makes quest out of a revenge story. So me, champion of the void, makes snack out of turmeric and tumors. You can taste the bitterness of my people's pain in our bread. Taste slave palms in the kneaded dough. Taste bucktooth rice hat at Marquette High School. The South Vietnamese flag flies on the third floor instead of the official flag of Vietnam, as if you won the war. Is this my apology letter? A flag of genocide, and I hope you never forget your failure. Thank you.
So as you guys know by now, both Camille and I are big music fans.
Huge. And when we were thinking about our event, we wondered if we could convince any musicians to take part.
So we got some interest from a couple of really, really talented songwriters. And this next story and song comes from one of them, local country music singer Jack Grelly.
So I grew up in West County, right by Queenie Park. My parents always said that they moved to that neighborhood because of the good school districts. But for them, it was a priority to send me and my brother and sister to private Catholic schools. They worked hard to have that opportunity for us. Both of my parents are from North St. Louis. My dad from Baden, my mom right outside of Ferguson. My dad's stories always kind of romanticized this growing up in the city of crazy characters in the neighborhood, German neighborhood festivals, and all the trouble him and his friends got into. I always kind of envied it. It sounded like he could walk everywhere, and it just sounded more lively and fun than where I grew up. But I had no real understanding of the working class household that both him and my mother grew up in, and the sacrifices that my grandparents made to give them the opportunities that they got. The grade school I went to from kindergarten to eighth grade was all white. I never had a classmate of color the entire time. The first black friends I made, I remember, were through sporting activities or summer camps. And our relationships never lasted long because they didn't live in the same part of town as me. And so it just wasn't as sustainable to stay friends. When it came time to pick a high school to go to, it was, again, the private Catholic schools were a priority for my parents. So I was picking between elite college preparatory private Catholic schools. And quickly, the St. Louis culture of what high school did you go to had already influenced my 14-year-old mind. I later became to realize the underlining classist and racist undertones that came with that question, at least from the circles I came from. By somebody's answer, you automatically had a list of preconceived notions and ideas of people's socioeconomic background just by the high school that they went to. The school I went to was, freshman class was about 350 boys. It's about 95% white. I remember about halfway through our sophomore year, a black student came in the middle of the semester, and quickly the whispers went through the hallways that they were there for our football team to win. They'd been recruited. About 2 months later, a friend of theirs came and joined our class as well. He was also black. He was also really great at football. The school was ran by Jesuit priests, and they had a service-minded motto of men for others. They taught us to be leaders and to seek justice, to be charitable. But in history class, we learned that the civil rights movement was a success, that it was over, that the South was the racist enemy that was behind the times. St. Louis was not the South. Therefore, we were not racist. That was the mentality I grew up in and was learning at that time. We didn't learn about St. Louis' problematic history. It wasn't until a few years ago I learned of the East St. Louis race riot, 1917, where white mobs murdered dozens of black residents. I didn't know anything about the real estate market's exploitation of black customers. I didn't learn about the zoning laws and redlining, Pruitt-Igoe, and white flight. We knew that we weren't the South and we weren't racist. That's what I was taught. There was no context of the current black struggle either. They encouraged us to volunteer and to be charitable, but they never gave us an in-depth understanding of poverty and where that comes from and the cycle that it creates. There was no critique of capitalism and class. Growing up, the city always seemed dangerous. It was almost this mystical place that was exciting for me, but I was terrified of. The news was filled of violent stories and blackmail faces where the
were the scapegoat for every single one of them. When I go to the Loop in high school to see concerts, I knew not to go north of Del Mar. It was a war zone north of there. Don't go north of Del Mar. After college, I had the privilege to travel for a few years, tried to do the whole hobo thing and play on street corners, and to some ways, definitely exploited my privilege by doing so. And I had extended stays in New Orleans and New York City specifically. And in those stays, I saw diversity at work and people from all races and classes and ethnic backgrounds and cultures all coexisting and interacting all the time, and realized that where I came from, that wasn't the reality at all. Through these travels, I really saw America's race problem and confirmed it. And I really learned that St. Louis was one of the prime examples of that. I moved back to St. Louis in 2012 and have been living in South City since, and I've fallen in love with it and realized the authenticity and soul that our city has. But of course, more and more realize the uphill battle we have to seek justice and to have a fair city for everyone. When Michael Brown was killed a few summers after I was here, and the uprising and movement that followed, I began to really critique my platform as a country and folk musician. I'm predominantly playing to white audiences, often of which that have no idea of what this movement's about, and often are fighting against it. I realized I had an opportunity to use my platform to reach this audience. So I wrote a song. It's called Changes Never Made, and it's about the events that happened, and specifically like the media's reaction. And I kept it matter of fact. I didn't want to get up there as a white man claiming to have all the answers to this black struggle in my city. But I found myself more so offstage explaining not what happened that day, but the history of our city and the makeup of our city, what led to that event and such a reaction. And so this song I'm going to play is a follow-up to the song Changes Never Made, and it's called Good Enough for Now, If Not Forever. Well, it's good enough for now, if not forever. Words tagged on a red brick wall. Guess one thing will lead to another. There's only few left standing tall. 'Cause the neighborhood wound up to be those in comfort didn't have to see. Struggles exist across the street. Results from when our parents flee. Well, it's good enough for now, if not forever. They say don't go north of Del Mar Boulevard. Gunshots ring out, they hit nameless children. We know every mother tries so hard. It's good enough for now, if not forever. Words left in an old schoolyard. Now there ain't no sound of children's laughter. Only a sign that reads no one's allowed. But in the west limits of the town, a class walks tall in their gowns. All the parents are so proud, they had money to put down. It's good enough for now, if not forever. They invested in a few of their own. What did they learn of the neighbor's plunder? Or to embrace a privilege already been sown? It's good enough for now, if not forever. Words been spoken to us all. Guess one thing will lead to another. In black and white, you can't see it all. In black and white, you can't see it all.
Coming up, our final story from our fall storytelling event, I Live Here. Okay guys, we're almost to the end of our show, but first, a confession. This next performer, well, I've been a fan of hers for a while.
Yes, she's a great singer and a great songwriter. And she's the second St. Louis artist we convinced to participate in our show.
Right. In fact, there may have been a little social media stalking going on before we met, which is how I found out that in addition to music, she's also an elementary school teacher. Anyway, her name is Ida Adeh, and like Jack Grelly, she has a story and a song about a place she calls home.
Hello. I'm a little shy, I'm sorry.
Hi.
Okay, hi. So today I'm going to be playing a song called Home. Before I get started, I kind of want to say where it came from. I'm a super emotional person. If I see something lovely, it's like magnified 10 million times for me, and I'm crying about it. I used to cry on Hey Arnold all the time. So the song was inspired by my actual home. I think I grew up in the most beautiful place in the world. It had huge brick buildings, huge yards for us to play in, lots of double dutch, lots of pranks from older cousins. It was just absolutely beautiful. Rose bushes up and down the block, like the best place in the world. And when I describe this place to people, everyone's like, oh man, where'd you grow up? Like, oh, from St. Louis, so it must be like Central West End. No, I grew up here on the north side, actually like two blocks from where we are. So now it's kind of transitioned from being this beautiful landscape with kids playing and my four aunts in a four-family flat raising six kids all together. It became something different. Most of the people that were living on my block are either in jail or have succumbed to drugs or have been lost to gun violence. I'm not gonna cry, because like I said, I'm a baby and I will, so I'm not gonna try not to. But growing up in this area really, it just taught me everything I know. I have no words for it. The house especially, it's a four family flat in the Fairground neighborhood. And my grandfather actually bought it for my grandmother. He met her when she was living in Pruitt-Igoe Projects. She had seven kids, and he met her, and he bought her a four-family flat for she and her seven kids. And you were saying how your grandparents lived in separate bedrooms. They had separate apartments. So it was my grandmother on one side with the kids, with the younger kids, and then my grandfather was over there with all his music instruments, and that's all he wanted over there. I remember being little and him like telling my mom, okay, doll, time to go with your kids and get out, because I'm running around pressing keys and stuff. But it's just the house has so many memories for my family and I. It's literally the number one thing that keeps us together. It's like if we mention Kossuth, my whole family's like almost in tears. It's where my mom was born and raised. It's where I was born and raised, my cousins, my grandmother, all of the memories and love that really fills that building. And the best thing is that I actually live there now. So I got to move back into that house, and it's, I don't know, I cry sometimes. I just come home and I'm like, I love it. I don't know. But like I said, I'm a baby, so. But yeah, so when I wrote this song, I was actually in college, and I wrote it with the four guitar chords that I knew at the time, because I only still know four. But it was when I had first started writing songs, and I actually had just gotten, like, dumped. And I was like, I don't really want to write anymore, like, about him. So I was like, I want to think about something that really makes me feel, like, whole and fulfilled. And the number one thing that came to mind was that house on Kossuth where my mother was raised, that my grandfather bought, and just, like I said, the most beautiful place in the world. So that song really came from a place of just missing home. And then kind of parallel with everyone else's story, Ferguson happened. And I went to school in Springfield, so it was kind of a small town-ish mentality. It's mostly Caucasian. And I got a lot of, oh, you're from St. Louis? You don't act like it. I'm like, so what do you expect me to act like? And they're like, you don't talk like it. I'm like, well, I'm from the hood. Like, I'm from dead smack in the middle of the hood, and I'm proud of it, and I had no problem with it. So this song really came out of, I really don't care what you think of my home. It's my home. Doesn't matter what the news says about my home. It's my home. It's where I feel safe. It's where I feel loved. And just kind of thinking about those changes and just remembering old things and hoping that one day they'll kind of come back around. So yeah, this is Home.
Where did my home go? Where is the place that helped me grow? Looking around, sad by what I found. This don't look like home no more. Shots going up, hopes going down. No matter what it happens, I'll always be proud. Fairground Park, porch after dark, music and life echo through the air. Kossuth Avenue, summertime firework view, coming home to a neighborhood proud of you. This is my home, where the shots won't bring me out, and I've never had a doubt, and I'll always be home proud. This is my home, an arch in truth's the sky, and our dreams are flying high, and I'll never say goodbye to my home. Only place I know. Where did my home go? I was raised on blue and gold, gateway to the promised land, the place that I call home. Cracks in the pavement, but not a crack in happens, city still surviving. VP fair, everyone is there, matching outfits, smiling and laughing, living without a care. Mayday parade, natural bridge and King's Highway, city pride. Tears fill my eyes, thinking about my home, where the shots won't bring sky, dreams of flying high, and I'll never say goodbye to my home. No, not to my home. And I'll never say goodbye to my home. Thank you.
If you haven't listened to the first half of the show, if you didn't take our advice, go back and listen to it. It's the episode right before this one.
And in that last episode, we did a bunch of thank yous and shout outs, but it doesn't hurt to do them just one more time. So thanks to Herb Arts for letting us host the event, and to Greg, our sound guy.
And to the storytellers, and of course, to you guys for listening.
We Live Here is produced by me, Tim Lloyd.
And me, Camille Stanley.
Shula Newman is the executive editor of St. Louis Public Radio.
And from St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.